back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Mix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do.
Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Climbs the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds?
Yes.
Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure. Brady's chased. Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone. A jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, Lance Meadow.
And we welcome you into Big Blue Kickoff here on this Tuesday morning on Giants.com. So glad you could join us as the Giants now start to focus and turn their attention to the Cincinnati Bengals, who they will visit in Week 10 before they head for their bye as they get ready for the tough stretch to end out the season. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. We are with you till the next hour, breaking down Giants football. As I mentioned, they're preparing for the Cincinnati Bengals. And to get better perspective on the Bengals, we'll hear from Joe Reedy, the Bengals beat writer of the Cincinnati Inquirer, coming up at 10 a.m. Eastern. So stay tuned for that. As the Giants looking to bounce back following a very tough loss to the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday, 24-20. And I know John Schmelk and I talked in great detail breaking down the game yesterday. The offensive issues, the defensive issues, the special teams issues. I mean, all three facets of this football team did not come to play on Sunday. It was very clear. And they are in somewhat of an offensive funk. Now, Eli Manning has not been Eli Manning the last couple of weeks. It's been a very troubling aspect. They have not been able to get that passing game clicking. Now, Victor Cruz has become Manning's security blanket, but one of the things that you could definitely make a strong argument about is they need better balance. They need better distribution of the football, whether it means getting the fullback involved, dumping off to the running back, utilizing screens. For Hakeem Nicks, one of the best playmakers on this team, to only have one catch when he pretty much is as close to full health as you're going to get, I mean, that's a troubling aspect for this Giants offense. So they need to find ways to get everybody involved. I think that's a big reason why this offense is a bit out of sync. Number two, the running game. It's been up and down throughout the course of this season, but they need better consistency. And I was reading the New York Times this morning, and they notated an interesting statistic, because it does come into play given what Eli Manning has produced the last couple of games. If you look back at the last time that Manning failed to total more than 200 yards passing in back-to-back games, you have to go to December 5th, 2010. So he had passed for 161 yards at home against the Redskins, and then a week later, 187 yards at Minnesota. Now, what is the difference between those two games and the two games with Dallas and Pittsburgh this season? It's the running game. In those two contests back in 2010, they did not have to rely on Eli Manning's arm. So it wasn't a problem with him throwing for under 200 yards. Against the Redskins, Bradshaw gave them 97 yards and two touchdowns. Jacobs then ran for 103 yards and another pair of scores. So they got four touchdowns on the ground in that game 2 years ago against the Skins. And then the following week against the Vikings, Bradshaw and Jacobs each had more than 100 yards rushing. They combined for over 200 yards and a touchdown. So it just goes to show you, this Giants team doesn't have to rely on Eli Manning. It should not be the comeback kids theme anymore. They're balanced enough, specifically with the way the offensive line had been playing earlier on in the season, that they should be able to have games where they can milk the clock and pound the football. And I know maybe it's wishful thinking at this point, and a lot of Giants fans out there disagree with me, but between Bradshaw and Andre Brown, it's not a matter of the personnel. It's simply a matter of execution. Perhaps David Deal, Sean Locklear, mixing and matching those two guys, changing up the starting lineup. He's a bit rusty. Maybe that played a role. But to me, it falls on both the offensive line and the running backs. And if they can't get this running game going, I think the next best thing is to get the running backs out in the flat, utilize the fullbacks, utilize the tight ends, and go for the short yardage situations. They don't need to go for the home run throughout the course of a game. Eli Manning even addressed this subject, and he said, listen, more often than not, I'm taking what the defense gives me. And he has claimed that they have been taking away the defenses, the underneath routes. So that's why he has not been turning necessarily to the likes of Martellus Bennett and the running backs. If they're giving up the home run, he's going to air it out. And he was asked multiple questions on this subject yesterday when he talked to reporters. And the frustration is building with respect to Manning. I mean, he knows that he is not producing at the level that he can get to. So they need to right the ship from an offensive perspective. And it's funny because, well, it's not necessarily funny for Giants fans, but you would think coming into this season, even dating back to the trends last season, the one thing that you would assume you didn't have to question on this team was the offense. If anything, maybe some defensive questions, given the youth of the secondary that they were putting into play this season with Hosley and Amukamara, injuries to the linebacker core, and a lack of a pass rush. But all of a sudden, the questions have now switched over to the offensive side more so than the defensive side, because even though the defensive side has had some breakdowns, they've at least been opportunistic in terms of the turnovers. When you look at the takeaway situation, now the Bengals are -5 in turnover differential. The Giants, however, are right near the tops of the NFC. Bears are 16, Giants are +14. So they're making up for the big chunks of yardage that they're giving up because they are able to consistently force turnovers. They had two against the Steelers. Prior to that, they had a stretch of at least three. And I think if they get that three safety alignment back, that could give Perry Fuel some additional flexibility because he can then move roll back to that slot corner. And then you don't have to move around Stevie Brown. And then Kenny Phillips will come back into the equation. Now, Phillips didn't play this week when they assumed that he was going to get back into the mix. And I think what hurt the game plan a little, they were expected to utilize that three safety alignment. It didn't turn out that way because Phillips wasn't ready to go. And Tom Coughlin was asked about whether or not Phillips had a setback, and he said no, it wasn't necessarily an issue about that. It was clearly Phillips went through a full week of practice. He just felt he wasn't yet at the level where he was comfortable he can make the plays that were necessary for him to contribute to this squad. So perhaps, depending on how practice plays out this week, you could see Kenny Phillips make an appearance against the Bengals, or if he doesn't feel that he's yet at 100%, you take the conservative approach, you let him rest through the bye, and then you bring him back immediately after that. Now, this is not a gimme game that they're facing with respect to the Cincinnati Bengals. They are 3-5. They've lost 4 in a row, the Bengals. It's a very middle-of-the-pack defense for the most part, but they've got 23 sacks. They know how to dial up the pressure. They just got their rookie corner, Dre Kirkpatrick, back in the mix, their first-round pick. And Andy Dalton has put together a couple of games where he's been able to throw for over 300 yards. He has a tremendous weapon in A.J. Green. Jermaine Gresham has blossomed into a reliable security blanket at the tight end spot. You want to right the ship this week. That's the goal coming into this Bengals game. Get back on the right track. Get Eli Manning to gain additional rhythm with the receivers. Get some semblance of a running game. And patch some issues up on defense. That's how they have to look at this contest. Because remember, you have to think about the mental approach heading into the bye if you have two straight losses and the wheels are falling off. Not a good position to be in, considering immediately after the bye, you start going into the stretch where you have a lot of NFC opponents that are going to be competing with you for divisional spots and also wild card spots. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. Lance Meadow with you here on Big Blue Kickoff. If you can't get us a ring on the telephone line, you can chime in on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me, at Lance Meadow, one word, last name, M-E-D-O-W. We start with the phone lines. We go to Dominic in Pennsylvania. Dominic, what's happening?
All right, how you guys doing?
Doing well, Dominic. What you got?
Okay, I have to agree with you. We do need to control the clock more. I think in the last few games, we've just been losing, the possession battle. We do need to control the clock, but when we run the ball, we need to execute. But more specifically, we need speed. I think we need more speed on the outside. We need to share snaps between Bradshaw and Brown. I don't know what the number should be, but I think that if we give David Wilson maybe 4 to 7 snaps, we should keep opposing defenses off balance. Some people might say that 4 to 7 snaps is too much, but I think if you give him a little bit, he might kind of get into a little groove, and then at that point, if they want to give him a couple of more snaps, then that's fine. But I would keep it at a minimum of 4 to 7 snaps. Also, the defense overall has done exceptionally well compared to last season. The only thing we need is a little more speed in stopping the run and pass rush. I think on defense, we need Blackburn, Phillips, and Jaquan Williams. I mean, they add so much more speed on defense to stop big plays. And I just want to get some feedback in terms of when all of these guys are coming back.
All right, well, appreciate the phone call, Dominic. I just hit on Kenny Phillips right before the phone call, and as I mentioned, it wasn't a setback this week. It's just a matter he's not necessarily at 100%. So perhaps they're a bit optimistic that maybe they can get him out for the Bengals game to get him some work in before the bye. I think Kenny Phillips is definitely in better shape than some of the other players. With respect to Blackburn, the hamstring injury has been lingering, and those hamstring and groin injuries, sometimes they're very tricky. It's a matter of whether or not he can get on the practice field come Wednesday or Thursday. If he can't get on the practice field Wednesday or Thursday, I would say the likelihood of Blackburn getting out there is not good, and the same could be said for Jaquan Williams. Now, Jaquan Williams is dealing with the knee issue, and you're right, Dominic. I mean, you hit it right on the nose. The loss of Jaquan Williams is huge for the Giants because of his versatility and his ability to not just match up with tight ends, which I think is key, but, I mean, he can run the length of the field. They have other linebackers on this roster that have that speed, but Jaquan Williams, to me, is in a class of his own. So that's been a huge loss, and he's been out since the San Francisco 49ers game. This is not necessarily a weak injury. It's been a multi-week injury. They get him back into the mix, the rotations change. You get Kenny Phillips back into the mix, the rotations change. The depth chart gets back to normal, and then Perry Field doesn't have to rely on, perhaps, throwing Jaron Hosley out there more than maybe they want. They like him in that nickel corner slot, but it's a rookie. It's a learning curve. He's had his ups and downs, and he'll continue to have his ups and downs throughout the course of this season. I think if they could get that linebacker core healthy, that will help their ability to stop the pass, but most importantly, stop the run. Running backs have thrived against the Giants, and they're going up against the Bengals team this week that has not really been able to get its running game going. Now, Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis has had 2 games over 80 yards. They're just 17th overall on offense. They're 25th in terms of the run. They're averaging just over 95 yards per game. And they brought in Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis from the Patriots, thinking that he'd be able to fill the void that Cedric Benson left. And Ellis has not really answered the call. They lost Bernard Scott, their backup. Cedric Pierman they're now using as their change of pace, but he doesn't get nearly as many snaps. They're expecting Green-Ellis to be their workhorse. It hasn't necessarily worked out that way. And similar to the Giants, because the Bengals don't have any consistency in their running game, it's affected the balance of their offense. And it's put some additional pressure on Andy Dalton, who has taken the next step in his development, but has been throwing a lot of interceptions recently. He's got 11 on the season, and they've been picking up in the last couple of games, which has been a troubling aspect for them because they were in a tight game with the Broncos. It was 20-17. Dalton throws a costly pick, and that gives Eli's older brother, Peyton Manning, an opportunity to go down the field for the game-winning drive. But you would assume, even if the Bengals don't get things going on the running game so far, they're licking their chops coming into town to play the Giants because the Giants have shown that you can have success on the ground. Isaac Redman, Alfred Morris, DeMarco Murray, LeSean McCoy, the list goes on and on. Giants fans know the script better than me. 201-939-4513. We go to Bill in Florida. Bill, what's happening?
Good morning.
Good morning, Bill. What's happening?
I'm a season ticket holder, and I fly up about six games a year. But my question is, we were running the ball with Locklear at right tackle, and we seemed to stop running when David Deal went in at right tackle. Why don't we go back with Locklear at tackle again?
Well, Tom Coughlin talked about this, and they felt that David Deal made enough progress. They had been using him as that swing tackle in the jumbo package. They felt that he was no longer rusty. He showcased enough things on the field that they were confident that he would be able to get his starting job back. And unfortunately, it didn't work out to the way they would have liked, because you're right, the running game and even the pass protection, which I think is even of more importance, took a step back in this last game against the Steelers by them moving Locklear to the swing tackle and bringing back Deal. I don't know if they're going to continue to play a game of musical chairs. I think they're going to see how things play out with Deal. And this really brings up a bigger topic across the NFL, and I threw this out on Twitter a couple of days ago, and I'm curious, Bill, maybe you have your opinion on this, and maybe other Giants fans want to weigh in. Should a player lose his starting job to injury, or should he get it back immediately? Oh, we lost Bill. But if any Giants fans have an opinion on that, I'm curious to hear your perspective. Every team has taken on its own approach to that subject. If it's a star player, clearly you're not going to bench your best player when he returns from injuries. For example, Akeem Nicks. If Ramsey's Bard and Reuben Randall were playing lights out, even when Akeem Nicks gets to 100%, I don't think the Giants are going to bench him. What about the offensive line? Should the rules change with respect to that? What about the running back situation? Because the reason I bring this up, the Giants have had multiple examples where a starter has gone down and the guy who comes in to fill the void has actually done a pretty good job. Andre Brown filling in for Bradshaw. Locklear filling in for David Deal. Wide receivers filling in across the board. And that's a good thing to have. It's a good problem to have when you have that depth. But the Giants, based on their history, based on the trends, have turned back to their starters despite them missing time due to injury. You could even go back to last year, and it was a game of musical chairs all season long with the offensive line. You had Boss hurt. Booth went in at center, and you can make the argument at times they had better production when Booth was playing center, and they had Petrosian at guard. And then they went back to their usual suspects, and it took a step back. I don't know if you need to press the panic button at this point after one game. Let's see what David Deal can do moving forward. And it wasn't just David Deal. Did he miss some assignments? Absolutely. But Bradshaw missed some pass protection assignments, which was a rather surprising issue. That's why Eli Manning took his fair share of hits. And it falls on the running backs, too. Just like Eli Manning sometimes needs to take what the defense gives him. And if that means throwing for 3 yards into the flat to Heinoski or Bradshaw, then take it. Or take the underneath route. The running backs need to think from the same perspective. Find the hole that the offensive line gives you, and if you can only get 2 or 3 yards out of it, take it. You don't need to go for the home run off the outside edge. You don't need to dance in the backfield to see if you can win the one-on-one battles. Because eventually, if you take the 2 to 3 yards, you're going to get a manageable third down. And also at the end of the day, you're going to wear slowly down the defense that you'll eventually get that 10-yard run. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. We go back to the lines. We've got Alex in Connecticut. Alex, what's happening?
Hey, I agree. I think that it's not fair that a starter loses their position to injury, but at the same time, if the guy's playing really well like Locklear was, we just have to ride him and ride the momentum because, you know, Eli hadn't been touched, and he really just seemed rattled in the Steelers game. And, I mean, like I said, I don't think it's fair, but I just think it's something, you know, if the guy's playing really well, you just have to ride the hot hand.
Yeah, you don't want to mix and mess around with continuity on the offensive line. So I certainly agree with the perspective that you're coming from, because an offensive line is just not about simply inserting one player at tackle, taking another player out. The way the tackle responds to the guard, the way the guard responds to the center, it's got to be one cohesive unit for all five guys. And when you take one player out and you insert another, that can really affect how well they're playing together. And I think that that was at the forefront in this Steelers game. And that's why Pittsburgh was able to take advantage with its blitz packages and get to Eli Manning, because, you know, Eli Manning's decision-making contributed to his woes. But also a big contributing factor was the Steelers had success hitting Manning and therefore affecting the throws. You can't overlook that factor as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I feel like right now we're relying too much on the big play. I want to get, you know, back to running the football. You know, maybe give Wilson a little bit more. You know, give Brown a little bit more. I like Bradshaw a lot, but I just, you know, I really think we got to start running the ball a little bit more, and then trying to set up the big play from the run. And I was at the Steelers game, and we just played really bad. I don't think it's time to hit the panic button right now, but if we lose this game to the Bengals, I think it's time to press the panic button.
All right, Alex, appreciate the phone call. And you're right. It's not at that point where everyone who follows the Giants passionately should start sitting back and saying, oh, here we go again. It's another second-half meltdown. They're having issues across the board. There are some troubling trends. Not going to deny that. Manning has had a rough patch the last couple of games. The running game has taken a couple of steps back. But, you know, the defense is still forcing turnovers. I think that's a big positive. One of the other things, remember, to take away from the Steelers game, which was a troubling aspect, is special teams. David Wilson had been great in terms of his spark plug in returning the football. And all of a sudden, they didn't get any push up the field with Wilson in the Steelers game. And the coverage units, it was one breakdown after the other. That's why you had two returns over 60 yards and one for 50 from the Steelers. And it wasn't just one player. So the scheme was working overall for the Steelers. Rainey had success. Emmanuel Sanders had success. That's a big problem if you are going to give your opponent the football right around midfield. The average starting position for the Steelers in that game was about the 35-yard line. That's a gift. Ben Roethlisberger and company sat back and said, thank you very much. The Giants' special teams unit made it very easy on the Steelers' offense Sunday. And it also did not do any gifts or any additional opportunities that it gave the Giants' defense to essentially set up in good position to make plays. You're backing your defense up in midfield and you're saying, make a stop. Pittsburgh gets one pass, they're already in field goal range. That's a lot of pressure to put on your defense. So that is something that they're going to have to correct. Now, with respect to running the ball more, and a lot of people have brought this up, how much balance between Bradshaw and Brown, how they should distribute the carries. For the most part, it's been about 2-1, if you look at the last couple of games. Pass protection, to me, is a big factor as to why Bradshaw gets more carries than Brown. And if the Giants are down, you're going to see more of Bradshaw. He is the running back that they have the most confidence in. And that is what is holding Wilson off the field. Now, we had a call earlier about giving him about maybe 4 to 5 carries. And listen, the Giants want to get him out on the field. He's the first-round pick. He's got that speed. He's got that burst. He's got that change of pace. He's got that game-changing playmaking ability. But as Kevin Gilbride talked about last week, he's slowly coming along. He has a lot to learn still. And the Giants need to weigh, is it too risky to put him out there perhaps on a second or third down if the opposition dials up the blitz and he needs to block a linebacker? And if he doesn't, Eli Manning's going to take a hit. 201-939-4513. We'll try to fit in another call or two before we are joined by Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. We go to Allen in D.C. Allen, what's happening?
What's going on, Lance?
How are we doing, Allen?
You know, about the Bengals, I'm trying to see how we're going to do this. We're going to focus more on the run. I know the running game is kind of soft compared to, like when we played against like the Marco Murray or something, but somebody like that. But last week we made Isaac Redman look like a Pro Bowler. I mean, he was just running hard on us, running all day. I know they don't have a very good run attack, and I'm kind of impressed with their guy Green, their wide receiver Green. How do you think we're going to handle them on defense?
A.J. Green, you hit it right on the nose, Alan. They've got to really hone in on him. They've got to be physical with him at the line of scrimmage. One team this season has been able to contain A.J. Green, and that is coincidentally the team that the Giants just lost to, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They put Ike Taylor on him. He was held to one catch, though the one catch was a touchdown. Outside of that, he didn't have anything else, just one catch for 8 yards. And the Bengals lost that game, even though Green got in the end zone. If they take away Green, to me, and hopefully Joe Reedy can shed some more light on this, the Bengals do not have another complimentary wide receiver. That's why I think it is so imperative for the Giants to take A.J. Green out of the equation. They have Tate, who's a young receiver from the Patriots. They have Sanu, former standout from Rutgers. But these players have not taken the next step in their development that Andy Dalton can go to them down after down, or they can create separation. The only other player in the Bengals passing game that has been consistent has been Jermaine Gresham, the tight end. And you also can't overlook him, because remember, the Giants have had some trouble against tight ends in recent weeks. Jason Witten had 18 receptions, set a new franchise record for the Cowboys, and that was giving Dallas 8 to 10 yards on first down. So they were setting up for easy, manageable third downs. And then Heath Miller didn't have a huge game. But if you look back at when he made his four catches for 48 yards, they were at key points in the contest that gave the Steelers first downs and put them right in field goal range. So to me, A.J. Green and Jermaine Gresham are the two weapons that the Giants need to focus on. And the way you get those guys out of rhythm, you got to be physical with them at the line of scrimmage. It's as simple as that.
Sounds good. I just want to know, can we score in the red zone or not? I mean, this is, we're settling for so many field goals. I think, that game against Dallas, it was blatant. We shouldn't even let them come back in the game. I mean, you can't limit us to field goals, because, any other team got weapons like A.J. Green, and they could score, so we need to get in the end zone, especially when we're in the red zone.
You're 100% right, and Alan, appreciate the phone call. Red zone inefficiency is what I like to call it. It's been a big, troubling aspect for the Giants as of late. And listen, Lawrence Tynes has been great because he's converting on the field goal opportunities. He's been dynamic. I mean, he's on pace to shatter the NFL record for most points in a single season. That's how good Lawrence Tynes has been. The next kicker is about 15 points behind him. But this offense is too good with respect to its personnel, at least on paper, to be settling for 3 points every time they get down the field. And that needs to change. Because you look back at the Steelers game, all of those red zone opportunities, they change it to a touchdown instead of a field goal. Maybe Pittsburgh is not in a position to win this game. Remember, it was a 17-10 game. The Giants had an opportunity to really put some distance between them and the Steelers, and they wound up settling for a field goal to make it 20-10. If you allow your opponent to remain within striking distance, that's going to be a troubling aspect. And the Bengals, like the Steelers, have offensive weapons. If you keep these teams around, it could come back to haunt you later on. All right, for those of you waiting on the line, we're going to get to your phone calls a little bit later on in the show here on Big Blue Kickoff, but we are now joined by a special guest, Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Bengals beat writer. Joe, appreciate the time. Lance Meadow here on Big Blue Kickoff. How's everything?
I'm doing good, Lance. How you doing?
Doing very well, Joe. And once again, we appreciate you joining us here to provide some insight on the Giants' opponent this week in Cincy. So the Bengals started off 3-1, Joe, but have lost 4 in a row, including a 31-23 loss to the Broncos on Sunday. What's been the biggest issue for this team during their most recent 4-game skid?
Well, I think you look offensively, I think lack of a consistent running game is hurting them. They ran the ball better against Denver, but you still don't have that breakaway type back. But I think it was a little bit more consistent on Sunday. Turnovers, Andy Dalton's thrown an interception in each game, and most of the time the opponents have converted in terms of points that way. I think also, too, defensively, they've allowed lapses at key times. They did a good job containing the running game until that next to last drive against Denver, when McGahee was able to get some big carries and kind of diminish the clock a little bit. And then Denver scored again. And, lack of turnovers generated by the defense. Terrence Newman got two interceptions
on Sunday, but that was the first time cornerbacks had gotten interceptions this year. I just think it's a very inconsistent team right now. When you look at this four-game losing streak, three of the four games they've had leads going into the fourth quarter, and they've lost them. Now they rallied to come back against Denver, and then about 2.5 minutes later, Peyton rallied back, and Denver got the lead again. But this is a team that in the second half, teams have been able to make adjustments on them, and the Bengals haven't been quite able to make their own adjustments.
Joe, you just alluded to the running game, and it really hasn't had that power element since the start of the season, since he ranks 25th in rushing yards per game, as Ben Jarvis Green Ellis taking over for Cedric Benson, who was pretty much the workhorse last season. Now, the Bengals did lose two starting offensive linemen before even one regular season game. Is that the biggest culprit as to why Cincy has not been able to get any semblance of a running game?
I think up the middle, center's hurting them right now with Kyle Cook out. I think a guard, Clint Bowling's done compared to last year when he started the first three games. Bowling has definitely made a lot of improvements. And, I mean, it's actually three going back to the offseason of last year, too, because with both guards, but Kevin Zeitler's come in and done a pretty good job in terms of that run game. I think the other thing, too, is that at the beginning of the year, they were looking at more of a backfield by committee. Green Ellis was going to be your short yardage, red zone, and some first and second down, but Bernard Scott was going to come in and be the good change of pace back. Bernard got injured early in training camp, was back for a couple games, and in that Miami game suffered an ACL injury and was lost for the year. So trying to find a second back in that dynamic to kind of take pressure off Green Ellis and get more of a quick hitter back, that's the one thing that they're definitely missing right now.
Talking with Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer, the Giants have struggled stopping the run this season. They've allowed two running backs to tally over 100 yards in the last three games. With that being said, Joe, how do you think the Bengals are going to look to attack this Giants defense?
I think kind of like some of the strategy with Denver, I think if they would like to get Green Ellis the ball a little bit more. They had a lot of 4 or 5 yard carries in the game, and against Pittsburgh, they got a couple big runs that way. And I think the other thing, too, is they're still trying to find a way to get the passing game going more consistent. Jermaine Gresham had the first 100-yard game of his career last week. And he's gotten down on himself during games where he's had some bad drops at key times. He had one early in Sunday's game, but then responded and came back pretty well. I think maybe getting Andrew Hawkins a little bit more involved with the short passes, screen game that way. They're still trying to look for a consistent number two. Hawkins is more of a slot guy. And try to get things involved that way, because I think as we found in the second half of last season and definitely with this losing streak, if you just have it the Andy Dalton and A.J. Green show, a lot of teams are going to shut that down. So they're really looking for other guys to kind of pick up the pace right now.
You mentioned Andrew Hawkins, who seemed to really provide a nice spark for the offense early in the season. He had two touchdowns in the first three games, and they seemed to always come on big plays, yet in each of the last five held to under 50 yards. I know that they have been utilizing him primarily in the slot, but have defenses adjusted to Hawkins? Is that why his numbers have dropped off a bit?
I think a little bit, and we kind of saw last year when Hawkins was moved up from the practice squad that the first three, four games they were using him mostly on receiver screens. Now, they did that a lot in the opener against Baltimore, but in that second game, the 50-yarder he had against Cleveland, that was kind of on a scramble-type play where once he got the ball and he was in a ton of open space, he was able to make some moves. The Washington game, that was a perfect little quick out down the middle where basically he got separation from his guy and was gone. I think with a lot of this offense too, those big plays, those chunk plays have been missing. They got some of that back last week against Denver, and that's kind of been a big emphasis to kind of get unscripted things and create plays on the run. That's how Gresham's 52-yarder resulted too. So I think they're looking for the more unscripted, more, you know, create things with Dalton scrambling. And maybe to, another thing, too, is making sure Andy reads through his progressions. In the Pittsburgh and Cleveland losses, Andy really wasn't going through his reads a lot, and he has one of the quickest releases in the league, but with some of the releases he was having, the receivers couldn't have gotten out of their break. So I think Dalton's trying to be maybe a little bit more patient, too, and let things develop.
Talking with Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. And speaking of Andy Dalton, Joe, Marvin Lewis came out last week and really called on Dalton to be more of a vocal leader, regardless of the X's and O's on the football field. Has that been an issue throughout the course of this season? And how has that affected just the overall production of the offense, you think?
Andy's vocal in his own way. The reason why I think it made a ton of headlines around here is during Carson Palmer's 8 seasons as a starter, Marvin never really came out publicly and challenged Carson or singled Carson out in a way that he did last week. I think it was also a call to the rest of the team, too, because after Cleveland, he didn't name any names and said the entire team was being too nice and kind of lacked that finishing instinct. They looked kind of flat against Pittsburgh, to where during the bye week he was kind of going not only with Dalton but also naming Ray Maluga too. These are our leaders. These are the guys you have to look at in the huddle. Start following them because they are young. But I think the rest of the team, too, kind of saw that as a challenge of, okay, you're challenging our leaders. Now we've got to respond for them.
Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer joining me here on Big Blue Kickoff as we're breaking down the Giants-Bengals matchup coming up this Sunday, 1 Eastern in Week 10. Earlier, Joe, you had mentioned that the Bengals can't keep relying on the Andy Dalton, A.J. Green show. But A.J. Green's been very consistent this season, and it seems that the Steelers are really the only team to contain him, even though he actually wound up with a touchdown in that contest. For Giants fans who may not have had a chance to really see the Bengals that often over the last couple of seasons, what is it about Green that makes him so challenging to match up with opposing corners?
I think his size, his athleticism, you basically put the ball in his area, he's going to go get it. James Urban, who was the receivers coach and quarterbacks coach in Philly, and he's a receivers coach here, I asked him last year to kind of compare A.J.'s start to DeSean Jackson, and he said A.J. was head and shoulders above DeSean. I mean, the first week that Green was in training camp last year, you could see that he was a very special player. He adds that deep aspect that this passing game had lacked for so long. You know, Chad Johnson early in his career had that, and, you know, as the years went on and, you know, there were some, you know, issues with Carson and the elbow and stuff, but Chad's speed diminished too, to where he wasn't that deep breakaway threat. They finally got that again with A.J. And I think A.J.'s kind of rounded out his game too, to where the short middle routes he's doing better, and he's also lining up at different spots. You've seen him in the slot a couple times. You've seen him line up in different places. He took a reverse this past week. So he's getting comfortable in more spaces than that just, you know, run 20, 30 yards down the field and go up and get it. But I think that one thing that was lacking, too, especially in that Pittsburgh game, is Andy didn't take enough shots with him. And it's one of those things that no matter what, at all times, you have to have the confidence in the guy. And if you don't think it's there, still go and take shots with him, because it was a receiver last year. When you talk about the big plays and big receptions, he was among the league leaders in plus 30, plus 40-yard catches.
You mentioned that Andy didn't throw enough to A.J. Green in that contest, but from a defensive perspective, if you're the Giants, what can you take away from what the Steelers did scheme-wise, perhaps, to take Green out of this contest?
Cloud coverage more to his side. I think that also, too, with LeBeau in his zone blitz aspect, they – did various amounts of pressure and pressure packages. I know talking to Jay Gruden yesterday, the one thing that they are concerned about is the Giants' front four. That is a very formidable defensive line that the Giants have. And Andy in this offense is coming off a game where he was sacked five times against Denver, and Von Miller got three off the right side. Not the greatest of games for Andre Smith, which that's the first time in a couple years I think he's kind of struggled. But of those three sacks on the right side, one of them was a clear coverage sack too. So I think if the Giants use varying amounts of pressure, that's going to force Dalton to release the ball more. And on the one interception that Dalton threw in the Denver game, that was due to pressure in his face and actually Robert Ayers knocking Dalton's arm, which it kind of caused a pop fly and Champ Bailey to get it. So I think pressure is definitely going to be the key if you want to get to Dalton.
Now, on the flip side, Joe, when you look at the Bengals' defense, 19th overall, 16th against the run, 18th against the pass, middle of the pack when you look at the overall rankings, but they do have 23 sacks compared to the Giants, who have 25. So what is the biggest strength of the Bengals' defense?
They're able to get pressure up the middle. Geno Atkins got 7 sacks, where last year he had that great breakout year, and he's kind of continuing this year. I think it's a deep defensive line in terms of guys that you have to deal with. Michael Johnson got 3 sacks against Washington, had a consistent year with 6 sacks. Robert Gathers, kind of the old veteran of this group, even has a couple sacks. And Domantas Peko is able to get some pressure too. Devin Still, the rookie out of Penn State, is kind of having a nice solid year. They've got depth and are able to get some rotation as far as bringing different guys in on that defensive line. I think the one guy who we're still kind of waiting for to take that next step is Carlos Dunlap, where everybody thought this was going to be his year, and here at midseason he's got only 1 sack so far.
Talking with Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Joe, before I let you go, one other player of note on the Bengals defense that just returned, first-round pick Drake Kirkpatrick, made his debut against the Broncos. How effective was he Sunday against Denver, and can he be an X-factor moving forward for this team?
He played mainly on special teams against Denver. I think he's still trying to get knowledge of this defense and what Mike Zimmer wants out of him. And it's a getting to know you process. Dre only practiced about twice during the first 2 months due to that pre-training camp knee injury. And he kind of struggled, too, in many camps and OTAs and trying to get up to speed with the system and everything. I think this was one of those draft picks that when they drafted him with the veteran corners on this defense, it wasn't one of those first-round picks where you're coming in and we expect you to start immediately. They figured they could bring him along in terms of different things that they want to do, and I think that adjustment process is still taking place. I probably don't expect to see him as an X factor until later in the season, but it sounds like right now, because he's had 3-4 full weeks of practice to where the knee hasn't bothered him and he's finally getting that intensive coaching and one-on-one work, that he is definitely making leaps and bounds. But, you know, probably this weekend, as far as a breakout and getting his first snaps on defense, maybe a couple, but I don't think he's going to be that huge of an X factor, to tell you the truth.
Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Joe, really appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much.
No problem. Take care.
All right. That was Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer helping me break down the Giants-Bengals matchup as they will go head-to-head in Week 10. Some very interesting stuff out of Joe, who says the strength of the Bengals' defense really up the middle. That's where they get their most pressure. And you look at the distribution of sacks, it's not just the defensive linemen. The linebackers have also been in the mix. And A.J. Green has been their huge playmaker, as I mentioned earlier on the show. But it's a matter of if the Giants can take A.J. Green out of the equation, can Andy Dalton turn to his other weapons? Can the likes of Jermaine Gresham, Andrew Hawkins, will they be able to make plays against this Giants defense? And secondly, will Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis and company really get things moving on the ground? given all of the success that other running backs have had against the Giants. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You can also give in your opinions, chime in on the conversation on Twitter. Hashtag Giants Chat. You can follow and interact with me at Lance Meadow. One word, last name spelled M-E-D-O-W. We go back to the lines. We've got John in Allentown, Pennsylvania. John, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing well, John. What you got?
Hey, looking at this game, I'm not even concerned about it. Giants got something to prove. You know, we had a, you know, not so good looking game with Pittsburgh, and you know, a couple of near misses, you know, and near miss with Redskins and Cowboys. But you know, this game is a statement game. We need to come out here. We need to take care of ball. We need to dominate from the gate, from the first whistle to the last whistle. Let's play all four quarters. And other than that, I just want to know, is there something going on where, you know, we're taking leads and can't keep those leads as far as, you know, with the Dallas game, with the Pittsburgh game? We're taking these leads and something's going on where we're starting to play soft coverage when we feel that we're comfortable. Do you think there's something going on with that?
Well, whose knees? I didn't hear you there. You're talking about a knee injury to a player on defense?
No, I said when we're taking the lead.
They get too comfortable, you say. Okay, I follow you. Sorry about that. No, I mean, listen, that's an interesting point. In Dallas, I think that was more apparent, not so much in Pittsburgh, because they didn't have a humongous lead against the Steelers where they could really get in a comfort zone and say, you know what, we could get conservative and step back. That was definitely apparent in Dallas. They had the 23-0 lead. I don't think all of a sudden they felt as if they had the game wrapped up, but you could maybe make the argument that they weren't nearly as aggressive as they could have been to perhaps close the door. I don't think it's a scheme issue. I don't think it's a long-term problem because they were aggressive against the Steelers. It's just a matter of the Steelers' offense was on the field so much because of that 35-minute and change time of possession advantage compared to just 24 for the Giants that they just did not have enough steam in the tank. And they could not make a play. That was their biggest issue against Pittsburgh. It wasn't because they got so content with their situation and felt as if they had the game wrapped up.
Yeah, but the coverage is just very loose. You know, coming towards the end of the game, it's like we're playing 5 yards off the receiver. And, you know, in the beginning, we're right in their face, pressing. And, you know, when we get a lead, it's like, all right, now we're 5 yards off the ball, off the receiver, and it's like we're all automatically just stepping back into coverage. You know, it's not like the first two quarters we were playing.
And that's a valid point. And, John, I appreciate the phone call. You're right. You always need to be very physical at the line of scrimmage. And that falls on the corners. Disrupt the routes for the wide receivers. Same thing can be said for the tight ends if a linebacker is matching up with them. And that's why I feel the loss of Jaquan Williams hurts the Giants because he is that aggressive linebacker that can run and stay with the tight end that they have not had in play the last couple of games. And then Chase Blackburn was absent from the game plan this week. So they had Mark Herzlick in, and Herzlick did struggle at times, whether it be in pass coverage or against the run. They get back to full health. I think that can correct some of the issues. And I'm going to throw it out there again, and I'm probably going to throw it out for weeks. That three safety alignment could very well change the tone of this defense. They're not taking Stevie Brown off the field so fast. It's a good problem to have. So Kenny Phillips comes back. They're not just going to say, Stevie Brown, head to the bench. They need to find ways to have all three of these safeties make key contributions to this defense. That's a big priority, I think, for Perry Fuel moving forward. Just want to get back to some of the Twitter comments that I'm seeing. This is in relation to what I threw out earlier, whether or not a player should lose his job due to injury. Marcus Erickson, a very good friend of the program, writes, I think that Locklear outplayed Deal and should be in because he earned it, not because Deal got hurt. And Locklear certainly earned additional playing time. The Giants did not have an issue, even though Deal wasn't in the mix, because they were able to rely on the versatility of Locklear. Remember, Locklear's played both sides in terms of tackle. So they're able to move him around. And they are going to move him around now that he's that swing tackle. But when you lose an offensive lineman and you have to turn to a backup, most teams see that the level of production falls off. The Bengals, for example, lost their starting center, and lost a tackle. They've been relying on a rookie. Locklear, at least, is a veteran presence. Right now, though, the Giants are giving Deal an opportunity to reclaim his job and hold on to it. If the production continues to fall off, perhaps they'll reevaluate their decision. But I don't think they're going to continue to play a game of musical chairs throughout the course of the game or week to week, because that's going to disrupt the flow of the offensive line, and that's something that you don't want to have happen. Sydney Faye Hamilton at Cindy underscore Faye highlights, is it poor game plans or execution that has plagued the Giants in the last couple of games? And it gets back to the point that we had earlier from John, who was questioning the scheme of the defense. I don't think it is the scheme. I think it's execution. It's players getting out of their gaps, taking chances when they shouldn't. I mean, look at how many missed tackles occurred against the Steelers game. It's not as if players are out of position. They can't wrap them up and bring them down. Isaac Redmond, for example, how many tackles did he spin out of on Sunday's game? Multiple. There were plenty of plays where they could have brought down Redmond for a yard gain or maybe a loss. He wound up fighting for 3 or 4 yards. And that also brings me back to another point with respect to the Giants' running game. That's the way sometimes you can right the ship. Your running backs need to be aggressive even if the offensive line is not blocking. They've got to fight for the additional yardage. You know why the Steelers beat the Giants on Sunday? It wasn't scheme. It wasn't personnel. It wasn't that Pittsburgh was that much more talented than the Giants. It was because they were the more physical team. They wanted it more. They fought for the extra yardage. When Pittsburgh had its back against the wall, they knew that they had enough confidence in their defense that they were going to wind up winning that ballgame. That's why Mike Tomlin took the chance on the fake field goal. Because he said, you know what, even if we don't execute it, I know our defense is going to get a 3-and-out. And they did. They answered the call. The Giants did not do that. The defense didn't respond to the offense. The offense didn't respond to the defense. And I don't even know where to go with special teams. We've been there, done that with that topic. Very rough performance by the special teams. Usually the special teams could help balance out the issues. But they don't need to go looking on the couch for additional players. They don't need to start looking over the waiver wire. The talent is currently on this roster. But will the desire be there week to week? That's a question I throw out to Giants fans. Do they want it each and every week? Will the execution be there? Will the level of intensity and practice translate to games? These are the issues that the Giants need to address. Perry Fuel does not have to go back to the drawing board. Same thing with respect to Kevin Gilbride. But they've got to get more consistency in terms of the level of play and also the decision-making. Players on defense need to be aware that, you know what, it may be best to just stick to my gap and not allow a running back to get an additional 5 yards. If that means he gets 2 to 3, we'll take it. And Eli Manning saying to himself, I'll throw underneath instead of going for the home run. Little things like that, you add that up in the end, that's the differences between wins and losses. 201-939-4513. We go to Dexter in Las Vegas. Dexter, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guy? I just wanted to piggyback on some of the things you were saying and stuff, but you're absolutely right and stuff. We have the talent on our Giants team and stuff, and don't get me wrong, you know I'm a Giants fan for real. But our linebackers, we need to get those healthy. When we get our safety core back, you know, with our safeties, and we get those back, we should be fine. But honestly, as far as, you know, people coming off the injury list and coming back and being a starter and everything else and stuff, I really think that when you have a core that's working already and the person that filled in that place and is doing a tremendous job needs to be set in that position until the person that's coming off an injury is healthy enough and proves himself to take his spot back. That's how I feel about it. Because if the person is doing good and you start switching these people around, the chemistry with those people, you know, with the linemen you know, they got a core now. They got a chemistry, and when you mix that up, you mess up everything and stuff. So whoever coming off an injury needs to come back and prove himself that he can take that position back again. That's my point.
Well, appreciate the phone call, Dexter, and I think you're absolutely right. Chemistry is such an important aspect to the offensive line, and sometimes I feel it just gets overlooked. I feel as if people think football is as simple as you plug one guy in, you take one guy out. It's not that simple when it comes to the offensive line, because I get back to a point that I emphasized earlier. The guard reacts to how the tackle plays. The center reacts to how the guard plays. If the guard is not playing 100% to his assignments, that's going to affect how the center is going to react. And in the end, that will affect the overall pass protection scheme. Now, perhaps what Dexter was touching on, maybe David Deal isn't 100%. I think that's pure speculation at this point. From what the coaching staff has said, they feel that he showed them enough in the last couple of games as the swing tackle that he was ready to take on a larger role. Did the pass protection take a step back in this last game? Absolutely. Locklear did a phenomenal job in helping fill the void when Deal went out so that the pass protection scheme continued. It didn't take a step back, but they've got to get back to that level of consistency. Whether that means plugging Locklear back in, or does that mean just giving Deal another game or two to get reacclimated with things, perhaps. But I think you've got to be a little bit more patient with respect to the O-line, because Deal had one game back where he played every snap. Let's see how he does against the Bengals. Then they're going to have the bye. And if the trend continues, then all of a sudden, you maybe can start tapping on that panic meter where maybe they got to change things up a bit. Until then, I don't know if it's an overwhelming problem considering some of the other things that the Giants are facing. We're still going to take your phone calls throughout the course of the remainder of the show, but we are now joined by John Schmelk, who joins me with one of our favorite segments.
Busy morning, huh? A lot of calls still up. Honestly, before we get to the Nuggets,
you want
to
take the calls?
We got three calls.
Well, I thought we had to interrupt things for you, but we'll go back to the calls.
Do the calls.
So we got what, Martin or Martin? Martin. Martin in Texas. Martin, what's happening?
Court, how you doing?
What's up, Martin?
Last week, and, you know, like I said, again, I'm a huge fan of the Giants. I just don't understand, what do we need to do on the defense side of the ball to contain those big, big plays that kill us? That's why we lost against Pittsburgh, because of the big plays that we give up.
They did give up a lot of big plays to Pittsburgh. They gave up a lot of big plays to Dallas. So you don't get over 400 yards just by luck. You're right. But I, once again, do not think it's the scheme. I just think it's players taking risks, being out of position, and offenses taking full advantage of that.
And frankly, being sloppy on their technique, not executing well, and they better do it this week because they're facing a wide receiver that might be the best wide receiver the Giants will face all year in A.J. Green, a top five wide receiver in the league. He leads the NFL in touchdown reception. So this is the guy the Giants are going to have to be very careful with. He has just as much explosive ability as Dez Bryant, as Mike Wallace, as Antonio Brown, as DeSean Jackson, anybody the Giants have seen this year. A.J. Green is the real deal.
And there were times throughout the Steelers game where you can make the argument some of the defensive players were about a step or two behind the offensive weapons that the Steelers showcased. When Mike Wallace got the ball, it wasn't as if the Giants weren't in a position to make a tackle. He just outran everybody on that play.
Yeah. Hey, look, he turned the corner, he was gone.
All right, get our defense together and play better and get another Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, Martin, you hit it. You got to play better, and that really is the bottom line. Thanks a lot for the call. You got to execute. And, you know, you could talk about scheme. People called up yesterday. Some people were complaining about Kevin Gilbride. Some people have complained about Perry Fuel a little bit. But the bottom line is that more times than not, folks, football is not rocket science. These guys are out on the field. They're in a position to make plays and to do well, and sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And more often than not, it is on the players, it's not on the coaches.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm not going to delay this topic anymore. I know you are chomping at the bit out some of the key statistics for the Cincinnati Bengals. So without further ado, why don't you fire away?
Well, let's see what we got here. Very interesting. They started the year pretty fast, Lance. In their first four games of the season, they averaged 28 points per game. But in their last four, they only averaged 19. So the Bengal offense has slowed down a bit as the year has gone along. They're very young on offense. They really lost six key guys from last year, Cedric Benson-Jerome System, Andre Caldwell, both starting guards and their starting center, all gone from last year. So they've had a lot of turnover from last year to this year. Second season under Jay Gruden, their West Coast offensive coordinator, very young offense. People forget Andy Dalton in college played the spread offense, so he's really only had 25 games playing in a pro-style offense. A lot of promise, good player, but still kind of learning on the job a little bit. He's still improving, still getting better. Certainly not a finished product by any means. A lot of three-step and five-step drops in that West Coast offense, a lot of short passes. They have five pass plays at 50-plus yards. They do tend to make big plays down the field. A.J. Green, 3 100-yard games this year. Zone scheme in the run. They haven't had a ton of success, though. Not one 100-yard running back all year long for the Bengals. Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis is their full-time running back. He'll come out on third downs occasionally. But in terms of carries, he's the guy that's going to carry the load. And the funny thing with him, you know, last year in the Super Bowl, the big stat with him is that he went X number of games in a row without a fumble, and he great at protecting the football. This year, tied for the NFL league in terms of fumble. So that's a little thing. You go to Cincinnati, things tend to start going wrong, apparently. In the third quarter, they've been outscored 67-33 this year. They've had a lot of trouble closing out teams in the second half. That's been a very, very big problem. 16 giveaways this season, not very good. Very bad third down efficiency. They've only converted, how about this one? This is a really good stat. I like this one. They have only, in third down and six or more this year, they've only converted seven of those all season long.
And how many? Do you know how
of
many
third
they've
down
had?
And six or more. I do not have the total.
Seven's not
attempts,
a very big number.
But seven is not a big number. No. Considering they haven't run the ball particularly well, you got to imagine there's been a decent amount. But I don't have the third down efficiency in front of me, but they have had issues with that all year long. I believe they're second to worst in the league in terms of converting on a third down. I don't have the percentage. You can look that up on NFL.com with their team stats. 18 holding calls, most in the NFL. They've never won a game where Andy Dalton's had 40 or more pass attempts, so that's a good barometer to measure whether they're behind or not. 14 touchdowns, 11 picks. Let's see, anything else on offense I have here? He will scramble or run around a little bit. He is pretty accurate. Three pick sixes this year against the Bengals. That's their offense. As for their defense, they don't have a lot of big names, especially up front, but their defensive line is very, very, very strong. I'll get to the secondary in a second, but they have 23 sacks. That's third in the AFC, 10th in the NFL. They have very good, young, active defensive linemen. Second highest sack percentage in the NFL. 8.7% of opponent pass attempts have ended in sacks. That's second best in the league. So if you really want to get down to it, they are the second best pass rushing team in the NFL.
And they get a lot of pressure up the middle and from the defensive tackles. It's not necessarily off the edges.
Yeah, people might not know the name Geno Atkins, but they really should get to know it. He might be the best pass rushing defensive tackle in the league. Pro Bowler in 2011. I'm sure a lot of people, considering it's the AFC North, it's Cincinnati, not a lot of people have heard of this guy. But he is very, very good. Him and Johnson, two of the young defensive linemen, have combined for 25 quarterback pressures, 13 sacks, and 19 tackles for loss this year. So that's very good.
Yeah, pressure is probably their biggest strength, as Joe Reedy had mentioned from the Cincinnati Acquirer earlier, because they're not getting a lot of turnovers out of their secondary.
No question about it. They've struggled in the red zone. They've allowed 67% of opponent red zone appearances to end in touchdowns. In goal-to-goal situations, teams are 11 of 12 in terms of getting into the end zone. And their one success in those 12 attempts, the Steelers kneeling the ball at the end of the game a couple weeks ago. So they're really 11 for 11 of them. First game in 32 weeks last week in which they didn't have any sacks. They've allowed 32 passes or 20-plus yards. That's fifth most in the NFL. But again, their strength, like you said, Lance, is up front. Their defensive line is young. It's active. Ray Maliugo, their middle linebacker, is their defensive captain. He's a good player. But, you know, their secondary is really where they've been a mess this year. And they've had a ton of injuries. Nate Clements has moved from corner to safety. Now he's back to nickel corner, the veteran. Leon Hall is their best corner. He tore his Achilles last year. He's back. I think it's less than 12 months since the injury. But he's probably their best corner. But he's battling a bit of a hamstring issue. We'll see about him. Adam Pac-Man Jones is there as their fourth corner. He plays a bunch. The Giants' old punching bag friend Terrence Newman is there as well. He's starting left corner.
He had two picks in the last game.
And four pass breakups against Peyton Manning and the Broncos last week. So he's actually playing a lot better than he did in Dallas. So, look, they have a lot of veterans. Dre Kirkpatrick, their first-round pick this year, hurt his knee in July. Last week was his first game, only really played on special teams. So you shouldn't expect to see him much in the secondary. And then it's safety. Chris Crocker's a veteran safety. Reggie Nelson, a veteran safety. He hurt his hamstring last week. We'll see if he's going to be able to play. And then you have Taylor Mays, a former second-round pick for the 49ers. Bit of a box safety. He started earlier in the year, got benched very quickly. And that's when they picked up Chris Crocker off of scrap heap, really. And he's been back playing for them. So, you know what? The Bengals are a better team than I thought they were, to be honest with you. I think the onus is going to be on the Giants' offensive line to protect Eli Manning. But considering their struggles in the secondary, this might be a game where Eli Manning and that Giant passing attack starts to get well a little bit.
On paper, yes, but if they can't protect Eli Manning,
right,
then the pressure is going to affect whether or not he can even get the ball down the field. So those two things really go hand in hand.
Correct. Very correct. And we should point out last night, both of us with the Saints got
that game
correct with our picks, which was good.
We were talking about this before the show with Dave Melroy and Nele about how, can you remember the last time all four teams in the NFC East lost in the same week?
It's been a long time probably since something like that happened, considering how most of these, all four of these teams, at least three of them on any given year, are usually in and around 500. So very rare that happens. So you take this week, you throw it out. No effect on the NFC East standings.
Movement.
Cowboys and Eagles missed a golden opportunity to gain some ground to the Giants. Giants, of course, are fortunate in their loss. Nobody gains any ground on them. But, of course, that does hurt the NFC East in terms of, A, trying to get a bye or best division, best record to get a bye week in the first round of the playoffs, or for the wild card as well, whether it's the Eagles or the Cowboys trying to get that wild card. Packers won this week. Seahawks won this week. Bears won this week. You know, three teams that, you know, depending on who wins the NFC North, Bears, the Packers, those two teams really, I think, have the leg up, in my opinion, in terms of getting that wild card, the Seahawks and whoever doesn't win the NFC North.
Well, and I think what it also has proven, perhaps, since the Eagles and the Cowboys both have five losses, I think a lot of people thought you need 10 wins to win this division. You may just need 9 again.
Well, you know what? The Giants, though, right now are 6-3. I know they have a tough schedule. All they have to do is go 4-3 the rest of the way in order to get to 10 wins, and, you know, they are the better team. You figure they should. Again, I'm not saying it's going to be an easy game, but they are going to be favorites against the Bengals because it's a game, I think, that you should win if you play well. That'll put them at 7-3 heading into the break. All you need to do is go 500 the final six games. Granted, you got to do it against the Falcons, the Ravens, the Redskins, the Eagles, the Saints, and the Packers. That's
tough. Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. That is freaking tough.
And all of those teams have something to play for.
Yeah, no
question.
That's
the key.
Except for maybe the Redskins.
But they're in the development phase, at least that's what Mike Shanahan hinted at
the
other day.
Yeah, that's true.
Those were interesting comments.
Though you wonder, by the last week of the year, are the Eagles just going to have to, you know, are they going to have mailed it in at that point? I mean, they did not look good last night again.
Well,
I watched about half of that game. I was not impressed by
they
Philadelphia.
They did struggle, and they struggled against a defense that's arguably the worst in the NFL.
I don't understand how you can't get the ball to guys like Jeremy Maclin and DeSean Jackson. I know he had the
Did that hurt you personally, right?
One by 2 points.
Really?
I eked it out.
But how about
sweating a lot more than I should have been, let me tell you.
Well, but all of the patting on the back yesterday about how you're going to run away with this fantasy competition, I have the final results now, if you're interested.
Which I did
You had mentioned how what? You had Celek going.
Well,
you had,
I had four guys
last
night.
You had a tremendous amount of players, and you thought that you were going to, you know, set the tone.
Yeah, I did not set the single-week record for points, which I predicted I would
yesterday.
You can't
teach height, my all-time favorite title of a team.
Still 98
Maclin
points
gave
is
you
a very,
two,
is
Celek
very
two, and you got 10 for Colston because he got a touchdown.
All right, so I got 10 out of Colston. That's not bad.
So you wound up with 98. But the surprise victor this week.
Go down to the weekly. I'll go down to the weekly standings. Here we got. Oh, Dottino.
Yeah.
But he did not break my single week record of 109, which is, that still stands. That's really
close.
The most important thing.
106.
Ooh, Howard Cross with a big rebound week.
By the way, was it a phone call or an email this week?
It was a phone call.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. That's an intriguing story.
If you want, you should bring Cross on one of these Tuesdays. And
we may have
to.
And then he
can
break down how he selects his team.
You know what? That might not be a bad idea. You know what? We should do that. We should do that on the bye week.
Yeah.
That might be fun.
I like that. That's a good idea.
Perfect. All right. Well, anyway. Wow, Anita had a rough week at 59 points, huh? So I did open up a nice league. Where are the overall standings
for the
season?
Actually, no, she's in third. Was she in second heading into this week?
Yes, she
was.
She
fell
to third. Wow. That is what you call, Lance, a comfortable lead. So now I'm sitting with a very comfortable 33-point lead in the overall standings. I mean, it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody, really. Anita has dropped to third place with 672, 6 points behind Howard Cross, who's in second. Then DeTino, catapulting to fourth place. Now, do we have evidence that he's actually picking his own team? Is he into it now? Excellent. Very good. We like to hear that. Go down. I'm not done going through the standings yet.
I just don't understand how I only scored 87 points.
Well, that's because you're a poor fantasy football player.
I had Decker and Marshall. Five touchdowns between the two. And I had Josh Freeman and Reggie Bush. I'm not questioning Melroy's math. I'm sure he did it correctly. I just don't understand how Freeman only gave me 17 and Decker had just 21. I thought maybe I got more out of Decker.
Decker 20, I mean.
Fred Jackson and Greg Olsen didn't help.
87 is a good weekly total. Just a lot of people happen to have big weeks this week, Lance. What are you going to do?
That's true. I did not have Doug Martin. That would have been the big one that would have put me over the hump.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, you're in third to last. But
you make it sound so pleasant.
No, seriously, I'm going to try to paint a rosy picture for you here, okay?
Yeah.
You're in third to last, but you have a 37-point cushion on Roman Oben, who's in next to last, okay? You have nearly an 80-point cushion on our good friend Dave Melroy, who just stinks at this.
It's a bad showing.
He's doing a good job of putting the whole contest together.
But we'll leave it at that.
He stinks at picking players. He's just awful. So you have a good cushion.
Too far behind.
I'm still painting.
Okay, just making
so
sure
you have
you
a very little chance of going down. Now, on the bright side, in fourth to last and fifth to last, you have Feagles and Bob Papa, and you trail each one by only 5 and 12 points. So you can easily pop up into the standings, and you're really within striking distance of DeTino and Salamone to move up. You could pass any of them, even if you have a good week, they have a bad week. You can move up in just 1 week past either one of those two guys. So I think you're in
There's
decent
room for
shape.
Improvement.
I mean, your chance of catching me in first is clearly,
only so few can hope to give you a run for your money. I mean, you are in a class of your own.
Well, despite my,
I mean, the mere presence of you in this room is an honor.
Well, I also lead you in the pick, so it's got to be tough for you.
It is.
To sit here and just be trailing in every possible category.
It is. It has been a rough week. I will give you that. But we have plenty of time. Remember, you were doing a lot of boasting early last year with the pick segment.
And who ended up winning?
But it was a squeaker for you.
Oh, please.
It was a squeaker.
It was a comfortable three-game win.
Oh, that's a comfortable three.
Very comfortable.
That's running away with things. I don't know what league you've been playing in.
Like Usain Bolt, baby.
Oh, really? Wow. Boy, the sports landscape changing in front of my very own eyes.
Sports landscape. Mike Nugent, by the way, their place kicker, former Jet.
Yes. Has New York ties.
Pac-Man Jones doing punts again. Hasn't fair caught a ball in like 3 years, apparently. Does not like the fair catch punts. I don't know if he actually hasn't fair caught one, but he does not like the fair catch punts. So keep that in mind. He does muff a lot of punts, too, which is interesting.
If the Giants special teams plays like it did against the Steelers, I don't think he'll be fair catching much this week as well. So that's an area that the Giants definitely need
Weatherford,
to
Weatherford, though, good at getting some airtime, good at putting the ball, outside the numbers. So, I think we might see some Pac-Man fair catches. We'll see.
All right. Well, you did your homework. A lot more to get to, I should say, the rest of the week. We'll have Paul DeTino and Anita Marks to take you through the next 2 days. So stay tuned for Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff. We'll keep you updated with all the latest surrounding the Giants.
You know what I want to say on Wednesday? I want to wait for in a couple weeks, on a Wednesday or Thursday, when DeTino passes Marks in the fantasy standings. Does Paul have the guts to talk some trash? What do you think? Is Paul going to talk a little smack, or will he just, sit there and be afraid to bring it up?
Well, it's a 22-point edge right now.
I know. I would
clearly lose in the span of one
week. I would love to see that dynamic if DeTino was outscoring her in fantasy.
That's going to be very hard.
Because I don't know if you've noticed this. When Paul gets tweets about fantasy football, all he does is redirect them to Anita and says, you got to ask the guru about this.
It's going
to
change.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think the redirecting should go the other way if DeTino passes her in the standings.
They may have to make a bet, and I think that should be the result. If Paul passes Anita, Anita has to forward all of her tweets
to Paul.
Paul needs to spend hours taking away time from breaking down Giants film to be answering whether or not I should start Doug Martin or Steven Jackson.
That's punishment, is it, though? I mean, that's like Paul gets punished for passing her in the standings.
But it's pure entertainment for the rest of us. That's what you need to look at.
So everyone else is a winner.
Yes, we're all winners. Paul DeTino not being able to spend 18 hours a day watching film. I mean, the world may be a better place. Who knows?
Just close the show, lads. You're funny.
Well, we'll leave it at that. And you'll be hopefully entertained by those two tomorrow. I'm sure they will go back and forth with their fantasy accomplishments in this league, as it will be an interesting race throughout
the course
of the season.
The guru and perhaps the master. Yeah.
The guru and the master. Look at this. New nicknames evolving as we
speak. He's not the master yet. He has to pass the guru.
But he's getting that. But what does he have? He has an orange belt now? where are we comparing this to the world of karate,
every
perhaps?
Teacher's dream is for the student to surpass the mentor.
We need to have, you know, a whole ceremony where Anita passes the baton to Dottino. We may have to clear out the cafeteria and have, you know, a whole – up on Giants.com.
We have a better chance of Melroy getting out of last place in the standings than we do of that happening. Not good.
But we're going to have to, work on that
Over
the next couple of weeks. All right, that'll wrap up Big Blue Kickoff this Tuesday morning. Special thanks again to Joe Reedy of the Cincinnati Inquirer for joining me earlier today to break down the Bengals. Continuous coverage here throughout the mornings on Big Blue Kickoff. For John Schmelk, I'm Lance Meadow. Have a good one.